And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yo, yo, welcome to another episode of the Forum Club. I am your co-host, Jovan Buha, joined by my other co-host, Bill Oram. Bill, how was your New Year's Eve?
It was good, Jovan. I had a little campfire in the backyard. I streamed a concert and projected it on the back of my garage.
Nice.
Yeah, I had like a dreamy little New Year's Eve. When you can't go anywhere, bring the outside world to you.
What were you listening to?
I'm an alt country guy, you know.
Okay.
Like roots music, Americana. So I was watching a Jason Isbell show live from Nashville. I don't know why I say Nashville. I don't say Nashville. I was watching a Jason Isbell show live from Nashville. That was really cool. It was really good. You know, paid a few bucks to be able to stream it live. You know, it's the first time in 10 months I've paid to stream like a live show, which I know like a lot of artists have been doing to get by. So it felt good to, you know, support an artist I enjoy and get to enjoy a concert again, even if it didn't quite feel like being there. It was the next best thing for sure. How about you?
Well, I'm currently at my parents' house right now. So my brother is in town from New York with his girlfriend. So my girlfriend and I spent the night with my brother and his girlfriend, a little double date action. So just drinking champagne and playing games with the family. It's definitely my tamest New Year's Eve in a while, but it was nice. I'm starting to feel like late 20s, you start to kind of feel the alcohol more, and that's kind of the stage I'm in.
See, Jovan, it is that's not a problem if you just never.
I've gotten washed in the drinking. I'm such a lightweight now. But this podcast has already got off the rails. but Lakers defeated the Spurs on New Year's Day, 109-103, in the second set of the two-game series in San Antonio. This was the first game, as you and I were texting, about that Anthony Davis and LeBron James both went off. 34 for AD, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 26, 11, and 10 for LeBron, his first triple-double of the year, of the season and of the year. I think the most notable thing in this game was KCP went down early in the third quarter after starting the quarter amazing with kind of this 8-0 personal run, you know, getting out in transition, looked really good, had a nice backdoor cut where Marcus Gasol fed him for a dunk. You know, so he was up to 11 points at that point, but he cuts into the lane, gets a nice pass from LeBron, and the second he plants that left ankle, ends up spraining it and misses the game. Afterward, he said it should be fine, that the x-rays were negative. He is going to ice it and, you know, hopes to play Sunday versus Memphis. But if KCP, I mean, you tweeted it out, he's an Iron Man. He's someone who rarely misses games. But what kind of impact would that have for the Lakers if KCP misses any time?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just how much perimeter defense the Lakers lost in the offseason with Danny Green and Avery Bradley departing, and what that did for KCP on this team, and in terms of really the responsibility it put on him, as well as Alex Caruso, who's also out right now due to the health and safety protocols. So for me, my immediate thought was, you know, if you lose KCP, you know, that puts a lot on Wesley Matthews, and then you just don't have great wing defense after that. You know, all due respect to Kyle Kuzma, he's just a little more intermittent there, and also spends a lot more time guarding fours. But you know, it seems like it's going to be a more minor thing for KCP. And you know, again, the good thing is that's 5-6 games into the season, so it's early enough where, you know, even if KCP had to miss 2 weeks, and again, it doesn't seem like that's the case. You know, the Lakers have a ton of depth. Talen Horton-Tucker, you know, stepped in and played pretty well, I thought, in the second half. You know, has really been a bright spot, you know, in his limited role, really throughout the, you know, the restart, I guess not the restart, but the start to this season, including the preseason. So the Lakers have the depth to withstand, you know, a short-term injury to really any of their rotation players, I would say. But, you know, it was one of those moments where you start thinking, okay, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had this great playoffs, had an amazing finals. Now he is the undisputed starter. That wasn't the case last year, remember. It was he only started in the playoffs because Avery Bradley was not there. And so to me, you know, you just don't want to see a player who has been playing so well, really since, you know, the first couple of weeks of last season. You don't want to see him lose that momentum and then have to, you know, suddenly rehab in season and whatnot. But, you know, it looked bad, you know, the way he reacted and was grimacing on the floor and then, you know, had to be carried off the floor. You always hate to see that. You like to see a player at least put some weight on the thing. But he really seemed, you know, post game to be in really good spirits. Did not seem to expect that he was going to sit out. This is a player who will play through things. I think in this, you know, in this strange season, these strange circumstances, the Lakers are going to be somewhat more cautious with players. But at the same time, you know, if the medical staff says a player is good enough to go, he'll play. And so, I mean, you know, it sounded like if KCP misses a game, it might stop there. One game, two games, or he could play on Sunday. But it doesn't seem like something we're going to be talking about as a series changing or a season changing injury, which is a relief.
And another update of note, Alex Caruso is going to miss Sunday's game. Frank Vogel said pregame, he's not sure when he's going to return, if he's going to return on the road at all. So if KCP does miss Sunday's game, you know, the Lakers will be down their two best perimeter defenders. And that is, you know, as you mentioned, THT is probably going to step up and play more. But, you know, I guess Wes Matthews would probably start in that case would be my guess. But that is putting a lot on those two to really, you know, kind of produce in those minutes and kind of replicate that defense that, you know, KCP and Caruso provide. The only other thing of note for me before we get into a new section that we're going to debut on the postgame pod is defensively. I thought that there was some really good moments from the Lakers in this game. And I know, you know, this is a team they should beat. And, you know, this game was maybe closer than it should have been, although they were a bit shorthanded, though the Spurs were too.
Ron, I want to interject here. Do you think that after this game, we can definitively say that Keldon Johnson is the best Keldon in NBA history?
I would have to know who the other Keldons were, but yes. I mean, dude's good. He's really good. I'm really impressed. I play fantasy basketball, so I knew who he was because of fantasy basketball, but actually watching him the last two games.
Did you get him off the waiver wire?
I didn't.
I did. Great Western.
Yeah, I messed up. I like that name. I also like Two Bill Determined, but that's an inside joke. I thought the Lakers defense tonight, they had several stretches that to me were their best defensive stretches of the season. And I know the season's young. You and I were joking, like, you know, small sample size theater, like six games in, but there have been some discouraging defensive stretches in my opinion. And, you know, a defense that doesn't look like it's on the same page and still looks like it has a ways to go to being the elite defense we know they can be. But this game, I thought, you know, there was some progress defensively. I thought they packed the paint well. You know, I thought that with the Spurs targeting Marc Gasol and Trez at times in the pick and roll last game, the Lakers kind of adjusted to that by saying, okay, well, we're going to kind of load up the backside. And if for whatever reason that perimeter guy gets past Trez or Mark, you know, we're going to have two, three help guys there. And then we're going to have to scramble out to shooters. And it did bite them a little bit. You know, the Spurs had a good 3-point shooting night. But I think overall, you know, the Spurs did not get to the rim as much as they did last game. And I thought that was progress and a nice defensive switch from Frank Vogel. Was there anything else from this game that you found interesting or are you ready to move on to the Q&A?
Well, I mean, I think one thing I'll just say is, you know, a lot was made post game about Anthony Davis taking six threes. He made four of them, which, I mean, obviously you'd love to see from Anthony Davis. But I think you made the point that he'd only taken more than two twice so far this season. And you can go through his game log from last year and find similar games. There was a game in Oklahoma City where I remember he made a ton of threes and it was last November. And there was so much thought about, you know, oh, he's just totally unlocked this portion of his game. And then he would go a few weeks where he wouldn't have a game like that or where he wouldn't attempt that many threes. And so, you know, I think it's great when he shoots those threes, but you need to see it, you know, over a month, over 2 months. So it goes back to, like you said, small sample size theater. You know, it can be a clue, it can be a hint, but in terms of actually giving us answers about what this team is going to be, we're just not there yet, really, to any of these questions we have. So what questions do people have?
We are going to be debuting now a new segment on the Forum Club. It's just going to be a
Recall.
Does that Q&A. Have a No, not yet. Wow.
Can we get a sponsor? It's such a spicy name. Can we get a sponsor for our really originally named Q&A?
Club Q&A. I don't know. We'll think of something. Q&A.
Open forum.
I like that. Okay. We'll go with open forum. If you guys have any other ideas, feel free to, you know, add us on Twitter and let us know what you think. But so far, I think that's the clubhouse leader. So I posted on Twitter, you know, if anyone has any questions for the post-game show, drop it in the thread. And we got some interesting questions. The first of which was a question that a lot of people asked. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. What is a way to get Trez unlocked offensively? And there's multiple versions of this question, but the gist was kind of, he's been struggling a little bit offensively the last couple of games. Feels like he's only really scoring on offensive rebounds and putbacks and, you know, occasionally, you know, diving or cutting at an opportune time. What do you think about Trez's performance offensively and maybe how the Lakers can get him going with that second unit?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, I don't feel like they've really been, you know, utilizing him as much or just as consistently as you were used to seeing with the Clippers, where he was, you know, really a go-to scorer. You know, he has not been a guy that they've been feeding in the way that we were accustomed to. And I'm not sure if that's just a byproduct of them having, you know, more shooters around him. If it's, you know, Kyle Kuzma, you know, gets a lot of shots in those lineups, not putting him in pick and roll enough. I'm not sure. I mean, it probably is some combination of all those things, you know, comfort in the system, which will come over time. I think it's probably, you know, an amalgamation of several factors, but I agree with the overall consensus that he hasn't come in and, you know, been the offensive Trez, at least that, you know, the rebounding's been great, but like, you know, offensive Trez consistently that we were used to that made him the sixth man of the year a year ago. Well, 2 months ago.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As we've discussed with Kuz, Trez to me is a guy who you sometimes just need to give him a post up or two to make him happy. And you know, I think depending on who's defending him, depending on the team they're playing, it might not be the most efficient play, but he is someone who I think tends to play harder on both ends when he's scoring and when he gets a bucket or two. So I do think that the Lakers haven't run many post-ups for him, and it, you know, they've primarily used him as a cutter and as a screener. And he is one of the best, you know, screen and roll big men in the league, especially against second units. But I do think he is a guy who likes his post-ups, his ISOs. We've actually seen some jumpers from him. You know, you've seen him taking more mid-range jumpers than he yep. took with the Clippers. But I do think running, you know, 2 to 3 post-ups, a stint or a half for him, I think would go away in getting him involved, because right now, clearly, you know, he's not really involved. And I will also say he's kind of struggled a bit offensively, especially in the San Antonio games, where he was blocked, you know, I think at least 2 times in both games. And you know, was kind of struggling to catch the ball, fumbling it a bit. So I think he's just still kind of figuring out the Lakers system. And I'm not too concerned with that yet. If there's any concerns, it's more on the defensive end than the offensive end.
Sure.
Another question from @DMX_biographer, does the lackluster 3-point defense get significantly better once AC gets back? Wes hasn't been as good as advertised there. I think, as I mentioned with the defense tonight, they were packing the paint a little bit more. So it did make those closeouts a little bit tougher, where they had to scramble more and it was harder to get out to shooters. So I think that might be a personnel thing where they just were kind of daring the Spurs to shoot more threes and kind of knew that their preference is to get to the rim and get out and transition and stuff. So I think tonight that was more of a scheme thing. But the three-point defense has been a little concerning at times, and just the rotations overall. So I do think, you know, Alex definitely helps that. I think he's their best or second best perimeter defender, depending on the matchup. But Wes has not, as we discussed with Wes, he has not played to the level that I think the Lakers expected yet. But he's also another guy who's a veteran guy, early 30s, like, it's going to take him, I think, a few weeks to get his legs under him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, listen, if you take Alex Caruso off this team, you lose, you lose a lot just of glue type contributions. But, you know, his perimeter defense, his off-ball defense, you know, just gets, you know, so much, you know, is such a valuable piece of what this team was defensively a year ago. You know, that's obviously something they're missing. But like, again, this is all, you know, these are short-term problems. You know, until we can identify that this is actually something that is, you know, an Achilles heel of this team, I just can't get too worked up about any of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we need a larger sample size with this team, especially because there's so many new pieces on both ends and not, you know, it's not a situation where, like, I think guys like Wes, I think Wes is a plug and play guy where he's going to shoot. You know, he's going to take his open threes. He's going to play hard defense. Like right now, to me, it's more of just a you know, timing legs thing for him. Guys like Trez, though, and Mark and Dennis, like those guys are big offensive pieces that are still figuring their role out. So I think judging some of those guys prematurely, like we need a 15-20 game sample to really start to fully evaluate it. The next question from Harry Howard at HHJR79. Is the starting lineup creating enough of an advantage so far, or does it need tinkering? If so, what are the other options? So this was something we discussed earlier in the week on our weekly show, potentially tweaking, you know, do you bring Dennis off the bench? Do you bring Mark off the bench? I mean, I think those are the only two options. I think the other three spots are pretty, you know, cemented. Bring LeBron off the bench when sixth man. But where are you at now with again, caveat, small sample, we're still kind of learning this team, but where are you at with Dennis and Mark's fit with the starting lineup and how that starting group has looked?
I think it's been pretty good. I mean, I think they were, you know, I think they were up three when LeBron checked out, you know, and it was not a great start tonight, but I mean, they've had better starts in some of these other games. You know, to me, I think this is their most potent starting unit. Like, I understand this is not necessarily going to be their closing group, but in terms of, you know, being able to, you know, get the ball moving early, you know, you have four playmakers on the floor. You have great cutting, you have good shooting. To me, it's a unit that can still really set a tone. And then I think Frank Vogel's doing all the right things. He's getting Gasol off the floor pretty early. He's letting Schroeder stay in for the entire first quarter to play with AD and Montrezl Harrell. I think that right now, you know, I'm fine with leaving it the way it is. What we've talked about is, you know, trying to get Schroeder more minutes with the second unit. If you let him have the title of starter, but maybe you take him off a little earlier and then bring him back to play, you know, maybe the end of the second, the first quarter, and then, you know, into the second quarter with Harrell and some of those guys. But, you know, to me, this is still, you know, I think this is the lineup that the Lakers kind of dreamed of, where you have a ball handler who can play off the ball a little bit too. I just don't think we've seen that as much as we thought we would. Like, I don't think we've seen Schroeder off the ball as much as Frank indicated we would coming into the season. You know, I think when Schroeder's been in the game, he's typically had the ball in his hands, even with LeBron on the floor.
I know. I agree. And I thought something interesting that LeBron said post game was that they need to get Marc Gasol the ball more, and they need to not necessarily run more pick and roll with him as a screener, but just get him the ball more in the high post, you know, above the arc and run cutters off of him. I wrote about it after LeBron's birthday, like, you know, the synergy numbers on LeBron, and it is early, but he is cutting more than he did last season. And I think you've seen that in part because of Marc Gasol's passing. And you know, those two have connected on, you know, two or three nice cuts to start the season where, you know, LeBron back cuts someone and gets a dunk or he gets free throws. So, you know, I think as we talked about earlier in the week, like if you're going to put Marc Gasol in that lineup, you do need to feed him the ball and obviously not necessarily to take shots, but he's such a gifted passer. You know, he's clearly the second best passer on the team behind LeBron. So, you know, it kind of feels like sometimes he's being neutered a little bit where, you know, they're just putting him in the corner. He's the trail guy a lot and just not really touching the ball. And, you know, I think Marc Gasol, if you're comparing him to JaVale or Dwight, like the upgrade is on the offensive end, not necessarily on the defensive end. So if you're not going to use him in that way, then I think it's kind of a waste of Gasol's talent. So I think that's something they're going to have to figure out. Let's get to a couple more questions and then wrap up. From Shervon Fakimi, I probably butchered that. I apologize. What's it going to take for THT to get consistent run? Because he seems ready now on both ends, probably would take Wes's minutes. Well, he might get consistent run now. He played 14 minutes tonight. And if, you know, with Caruso out and KCP, you know, potentially out or on limited minutes on Sunday, you could see THT maybe get 15, 20 minutes. What have you thought about THT's game? And you know, do you think he is ready to usurp Wes or someone else in the rotation?
I mean, listen, I understand why fans want this. I understand why it's, you know, it's exciting. There's not a lot of variables with this team. For the most part, you know who's going to play. You know, there's not a lot of intriguing players down the roster. Over the last 8 years, you had a lot of, you know, second round picks that you wanted to see get out there and you wanted to see if they could be players. And it's very clear at this point that THT is going to be a player and is a player right now. But you're not going to see in the NBA where a coach is going to strip a veteran of Wesley Matthews' caliber of his role in the rotation 6 games into the season because he's had a slow start to give those minutes to a 20-year-old with upside. It just isn't going to happen. So it's obvious that Frank is trying to find minutes for THT anywhere he can. He's getting him out there. He's getting him out there in high leverage situations, I think. But the reality is that with the makeup of this roster, with a healthy roster, THT is still going to be the 11th or 12th guy. And that's okay because he is 20. And he's going to get his opportunities. There will be injuries. There will be nights that guys are out. But if you're looking for him to get a 20-minute a night role, it's not going to happen probably this season, but certainly not without Wesley Matthews getting every single opportunity there is to find his footing and to, you know, be the player the Lakers anticipated. Because remember, they didn't sign him to the minimum, the veterans minimum. It wasn't like, you know, he came crawling to the Lakers and they said, okay, we'll sign you. He was the first guy they targeted on the first night of free agency. They expect him to play a big role on this team. So they're not just going to bench him for 20-year-old THT because one of them is playing slightly better than the other right now. It's going to be a longer process than that. And listen, I'm not ruling out the possibility that Wesley Matthews is going to lose his role to THT. It could happen, but it's not going to happen until much later in the season, if it happens at all.
And the other thing with that is I'm not even sure if it makes sense to bench Wes for THT in the context of they're so different skill set wise, where if you're looking at THT's weaknesses right now, it's his 3-point shooting and his defense, right? Like, you know, offensively, we've seen him, he can handle the ball. He can play make, he can get to the rim. He even has a little bit of that mid-range jumper, but he's not a good 3-point shooter right now. And defensively, he has a tendency to foul a lot. You know, he can get blown by. So like, those are the two areas of his game that he's still working on. And those are the two strengths of Wes Matthews' game. Like, he's he's the prototypical 3-and-D role player. So just when looking at kind of what each guy brings, I don't even know necessarily if that's, you know, kind of fair to, like, Wes brings something entirely different. Yeah. If you're going to take someone's minutes, it might be Caruso. It might be Kuzma, you know, and maybe playing a little bit smaller with the second unit, because we know Kuzma plays so much in that second group with LeBron and Keefe and Caruso and Matthews. So I think that's maybe where you see 2 to 5 minutes shaved off some of those guys. But really with what Wes brings, I don't see how THT is like.
That's a good
point. It's just different roles. But last question here from our friend Mo DeKeel, Mo_DeKeel_MBA. Who has better hair between you and Bill Orem?
I mean, listen, like I could sit here and tell you why my hair is like secretly like actually better than like the reason I wear hats all the time is to really protect everyone else from how how gorgeous my locks are. But I'm not, you have good hair.
I mean, I like your hair.
I have a lot of it. I have very thick hair. I can't tell you how many times whenever I get my hair cut by someone new, which isn't the case, which isn't often anymore. I've got a reliable guy. I've got Bruce the barber.
And shout out Bruce. Bruce.
And Bruce takes good care of me, at least in normal years. So, but I think it's just, I mean, listen, it would be a waste of everyone's time to sit here and pretend that I have better hair than you. You have the best hair in the NBA. You and Myers Leonard and Zach Collins have the best hair in the NBA. And did I leave someone out? Did I leave one of your doppelgangers out?
Well, it's basically every like white NBA player. I've gotten Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. But I think Zach Collins is the one that's closest.
Whereas I'm more of a Jokic so
I will say you beat me in the facial hair for sure. I'm incapable of growing facial hair, so that is no competition.
You know what? This is an interesting point. We might have of all the NBA beat writing groups in the NBA, we might have the three writers least capable of growing facial hair. Because there's you. Like, what happens if you grow it out? Like, do you get a few strands, or can you like, could over time, could you grow something? Do you get patches?
No, I literally don't have. I only grow a little bit of hair on my mustache and on my chin, and it's like probably 20 hairs in each spot. And nothing on sideburns, nothing on my cheeks, jaw, nothing. So
okay, so yeah, you share this with Kyle Goon, who can't grow facial hair, and Wojcie. Wojcie cannot grow facial hair either. Dan Wojcie from the LA Times. Like, he gets like a little peach fuzz upper lip and that's it. So, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, there are exceptions, but like of men who on the NBA beat, I think we might have the three least capable of growing facial hair.
And then there's you and Dave on the opposite side of the spectrum.
Right, right. And this is why you listen to the end of the post-game episodes, because you don't know when the conversations are going to devolve into this.
We covered a lot tonight. This is definitely my favorite Forum Club pod of the like five I've done now.
All right. Can you get us out of here, please?
Let's get out of here. Hope you all had a happy and safe new year. Hope you got to spend it with some of your loved ones for those who are able to. We appreciate you guys listening into this madness of a podcast, and we will be back on Monday morning after Sunday's game against Memphis. Talk to you then.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner StubHub has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.